Carpaccio.
Sal!
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 Carpaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Carpaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Happy Halloween, everybody. Bills back to work this week ahead of the Dolphins game. We've talked a little bit about the Colts' decision on Anthony Richardson. Plenty about some candy as it's Halloween. And Sal's joining us too. You wanna write the Yankees obit, Sal? How you feeling after last night's game? I mean, maybe you'd already kind of, maybe not written off the series, but you knew it would have been a battle. At 5-0, I thought.
It would have been tough not to have been feeling back into it by that.
Belief might have been pretty strong at 5-0.
Oh, it was. Yeah, I'm really disappointed this morning, for sure. It hits differently when you have, you know, a child. Like, people have told us all about this with the Bills and stuff. And, you know, and I get it when they're of that age and, you know, you're kind of rooting together and it's the first kind of championship that you've experienced together for your team to be in, you know. So that hurts. He's okay. I'm okay. It's sports. But it definitely was a false sense of security last night at 5-0. There's no doubt. What's crazy is I did not see anything that led to the bases loaded until after it happened because I was actually putting Max to bed. And I looked, I'm like, oh man, bases loaded. And then I saw how it happened with Judge and the error on Volpe. And then I watched live the error on, you know, the situation with Garrett Cole. He doesn't cover first base. And it just, once that was starting to happen, you knew, like, oh my God, like, they could blow this. And then when they get a couple hits, yeah. So I think more than anything, look, I mean, it's sports. For me, guys, the Yankees had a much better season than I thought. I actually thought, and, you know, Josh will tell you from the Extra Point Show back in April, like, I thought the Orioles would win the division. I just said, this Orioles are too good. They're young. They're athletic. They're really good. So I had a nice year watching the Yankees unexpectedly get to this point, but blowing it like that just really hurts. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's where I land right now. And now we'll see what happens with Soto. And, you know, obviously the managerial stuff and all that, I get it. But, you know, I don't know if they can keep Soto. They have to give him something probably like you do with Ohtani in L.A. And I just don't want him to go to the Mets because that's a big rumor could happen.
Ohtani to the – wait.
No, who? No, it's Soto.
Soto, I was going to say. Soto, that's Ohtani, yeah. He just signed a pretty big deal.
No, the contract, yeah.
Yeah.
Ohtani got
the contract for the Yankees, like, it might have to give something like Ohtani and the Dodgers. I don't know if the Yankees would do something like that. They typically don't.
Yeah.
You know, with the deferred money. But you might take something like that, is my point, because
– yeah.
He's just, what's he going to command? I mean, it's crazy how much money he's going to make.
Yeah. And for the Dodgers, I mean, Ohtani pitches next year. I think, at least.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, oh, we'll see what happens there.
And Freddie Freeman, an unbelievable series, like 12 runs batted
in. He almost hit another homer last night. That was the Judge catch at the wall.
He had the record for runs batted in a series. Tied it.
They are really, just really good, you know, and that's why, like, you give them a couple of outs that you shouldn't give them, and that's what happens. You know, that's baseball, and yeah, I respect it. I do. I mean, you know, it sucked last night watching, but I respect the fact that, like, they just grind and just put you in a position where you can't make a mistake. And that's tough on anybody. And that was tough on Cole, I think, once he got in that situation. He got out of it at the end, but then they just couldn't hold it.
Well, the good news is, Sal, I think pitchers and catchers report in 2 weeks, right? It's pretty soon.
I thought about that last night, Jeremy. Yeah. It's crazy.
It comes
right?
up that's pretty amazing. Quick. It does come up pretty quick. Anyway,
it's the shortest offseason for sure.
All right. So, yeah, really, October 31st. I mean, we're almost into November for this series if it went any longer. All right, Sal, so let's get to business with the Bills, and we'll get your candy takes at the end of the segment if you've got some time for that.
Oh,
so the Barnes Firm injury report, brought to you by the Barnes Firm, injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. A lot of names with full next to their name. So maybe give us why that does happen, why you list guys that are full. This is the point about if they're getting treatment, they must be listed, I think. And
That's exactly right.
Okay, go ahead.
So the Bills have, I mean, the Dolphins have 16. I think the Bills have 19 maybe or 20. I have to go back and look and count them all either way. And for the Bills side of things, they have that many, and yet only one player did not practice. And that wasn't even due to injury. That was Alec Anderson yesterday, was excused for personal reasons. They had four guys limited. Terrell Bernard did practice. He was limited. Reggie Gilliam was practiced. He was limited with a hip injury. It's kind of a surprise. We didn't know that. Curtis Samuel limited with a pectoral. And then an interesting one was Amari Cooper. We were told by Sean McDermott, he wouldn't practice due to a wrist injury, but he said they'd take it one day at a time. We went out to practice. He was dressed. I mean, he was practicing. I'm like, all right. My guess is there. People say, how can the coach not know? I think what probably happens in that situation is Sean McDermott gets a gets an update from the trainers in the morning. Hey, we're going to lay off him today. Got the wrist injury. It's Wednesday. And then Sean comes to talk to us. And in the meantime, Amari probably goes, gets rechecked by the trainer, says, you know what? I'm going to give it a go. Let's try it. So then he goes out there. And I think that could happen. You know, and it's not completely rare, but it's not very normal. But that's encouraging news. All right. The reason why is because, you guys, the NFL has really, really cracked down on the injury reports and making sure that everybody who has any sort of ailment that's getting any sort of treatment is getting listed. And really the biggest reason is for gambling, as you can imagine, right? I mean, the explosion of gambling that's happened throughout the league and all the, I mean, hey, we're reading, you know, stuff for gambling and FanDuel and things like that a lot, right? And you know just how big it is. Remember last year, the Cincinnati Bengals and the wrist injury and what happened, right? I mean, like, it was just a big deal to, you know, hey, why wasn't he listed? This is not like Bill Belichick back in the day who he'd have to list everybody because he just was doing a big, you know, sticking it to the league because they gave him a little bit of crap one time about Tom Brady not being listed. That's not why. They're doing it because they have to. And if not, they're going to get in trouble, a lot of trouble by the league. Get fined and, you know, there's repercussions. And the league is very serious about this. So anybody who's getting any sort of treatment on anything is going to get listed on the injury report.
How good of a sign is it that Terrell Bernard and Curtis Samuel were back?
It's a great sign. They are still limited. So we'll see how it goes this week for them. Terrell spoke afterwards to us, and he said that he's still working through some things with the ankles. He's got some hurdles to clear before, you know, that he's going to play. And, you know, when asked what hurdles those are, you know, he's like just feeling better, feeling good. And, you know, they'll work throughout the week to see, you know, where that stands. But, you know, it's very encouraging that he's there. And then Samuel as well. But I think, you know, he hasn't made an impact, right? And I think for me, I just want to—I'd love for Curtis Samuel to play and just make an impact one game and say, okay, that's why you signed the guy. But the other part, guys, is hey, Amari Cooper, he's dealing with a wrist injury, so you'd really like to have, you know, Curtis Samuel and all your guys available and healthy if, you know, there's something bothering him.
I'd be just curious to see too how they would use him. Maybe it wouldn't be that different, though, I guess, because beginning of the year, it was a lot of, hey, he's in the backfield on this play, and now it's a bubble screen on this play, and, you know, he's in motion here. Like, they kind of, I guess, already used him this way, but I wonder, Sal, the guy, I know it's, like, natural. I even heard it in the press conference this week, like, comparing Shakir to Cole Beasley. Like, it's natural to compare guys to players that used to play for the team. And I was thinking about Samuel recently about, like, I wonder if he's just going to get used the way Isaiah McKenzie used to get used on this offense. Maybe he makes more of an impact, but I don't know what other role is there for him, given now that Cooper's on the team and Coleman and Shakir are just playing well enough to where I think if everyone's healthy and rested, I don't think you would ever take them off the field for a regular receiver role right now for Curtis Samuel.
Yeah, and I think in some level that's got to be disappointing, right, Joe? Because I don't think that's why he was signed. You know, you don't give him $8 million to play that role, but now here we are. And I think you kind of have to maybe shift your philosophy, what you're thinking, how you use him and everybody else. I wonder, too, sometimes how much, you know, getting Amari Cooper, the shape of the wide receiver room now is impacted by the fact that he has not been impactful. And they had to kind of change their own philosophy on it. I just can't sit here still and think that when they signed him for $8 million a year, considering what he did with Joe Brady in 2020, and he's had a good career outside of that, too. Now, it hasn't been unbelievable, spectacular numbers, but it's been nice. It's been good. He's been a solid player. I just can't believe that, like, this was the plan, that he would be this, you know, not involved. There's been injuries. There's no doubt. You know, you go back to preseason and the turf toe. It just doesn't seem like it's gone the way it's supposed to. But, you know, that's why you adjust. And, hey, now Amari Cooper's here. And, you know, we'll see where it goes. So, yeah, just real quickly, guys, back to the injury report. You know, the Dolphins are the same way, by the way. They 16 guys. And there's a bunch of guys like Javon Holland, you know, who's on the report, who we don't know if he'll play. Kader Kohu, don't know if he'll play. They have 10 guys who didn't play. Four of them are rest, didn't practice. Four of them are rest days. Six are due to, you know, injuries. Excuse me, Tyreek Hill. He's on there, but he had a rest day. But this is why I think I always try to talk people down a little bit who get so crazy and upset about like the like how many injuries the Bills have. It never stops. Well, it you have to look. I mean, this is professional football. They're going to get banged up. And if somebody has anything, like here, let's pick somebody here. As somebody who's like, how about Dawson Knox, ankle? Yeah, he missed a day of practice last week. Well, he's probably still doing something with trainers, getting checked out. So guess what? They got to slap an ankle injury on him. Yesterday at practice, he's a full participant. Mm-hmm. Like, that's just the way it goes. So just get used to it going down the road. And, you know, it's not the number of players on the report that matter. It's how many guys miss games, actually, that matter, to be honest with you.
On that Dolphins report, he's not injured. You mentioned it's a rest day. Are you wondering at all about Hill right now for the Dolphins? Because he is, I think it's one 100-yard game since week 12 of last season. Like, it's one in his last 10. I mean, he still looks insanely fast. Maybe it's more about the offense. And, of course, Tua missed, I think, 3 of those 10 games. But, like, it's funny, Sal, like, he's still considered one of the best receivers in football, and the combination of what he's done, what little he's done against the Bills, plus, really, he's kind of, I don't want to say hit a wall, but he's regressed statistically recently, that I'm going to this game on Sunday, and I just feel like I'm not, I should be worried, I feel like I'm just not really respecting the threat as much as maybe I should be.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this is where you're going with it, but what I've thought about him, Joe, is... is he a trade candidate? What if they lose?
Okay.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, this is a guy where would they decide, hey, you know, we can start moving on now? I thought about him as going back to the Chiefs a little while ago, to be honest with you. Then they obviously made their trade already for a wide receiver, DeAndre Hopkins. I really thought a couple weeks ago, man, could the Chiefs look to bring Tyreek Hill back? They probably need a receiver. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't feel like he's the exact same, but you have to respect the speed. You have to respect the big playability still. There's no doubt about it, especially with Tua still now playing quarterback again. You never know. He just, bam, here come. He could have that great. I think it happened against Jacksonville in the opener.
Yeah, that was his one.
He had the one. Yeah, like an 80-yard touchdown, yeah. Right?
Yep.
I mean, it just, you have to respect that, no doubt about it. I wonder about, speaking of guys that, you know, could they possibly wind up dealing them? We had Matt Bove and I did. It's always game day last night, and we had Alan Poupart, who writes for the SI for the Dolphins, and he talked about, you know, Calais Campbell, and this could be his last year, but he's having a really good year. Like, if they lose this game, could they trade Calais Campbell? Like, trade him to a contender. I mean, that's the situation they're in as well. You know, so it's interesting to see. Zach Sealer, by the way, still out with the crazy story last week. You gotta feel so bad for the guy. He got poked in the eye at practice on Thursday, and then you find out on Friday it's a broken orbital bone. So he didn't practice. He didn't play last week. He's a big player for them. And, you know, we'll see if he plays this week, but he's also out with an eye injury again this week. Emmanuel Ogba out with a bicep injury and an illness, didn't practice yesterday. So they're dealing with a lot of injuries on that side.
Let me take this out for a test drive real quick, because you're talking about the trade deadline, just had me think of it, and Campbell. If they lose this game, what if Jordan Poyer is on the trade market? Do you think that's an impossible idea?
Impossible? I would not see the Buffalo Bills giving up an asset for Jordan Poyer or Tre'Davious White. I'll say it that way.
Okay.
I mean, it's just, let's just say those two players were released.
White for sure. Yeah.
Would the Buffalo Bills, you know, it's funny you say that. We asked Alan Poupart again last night. Matt said, how is Jordan Poyer doing? And Alan's response, it was really interesting. It was basically the exact same response any of us would have given at the end of last year about Jordan Poyer, which is, he said, great leader, intangibles, just goes out there and tries the ball every single time he's on the field, just doesn't have it anymore.
Yeah.
Basically, it's what he said.
Yeah. The only reason I'm even asking is because we kind of do this with safety, right? Like, every time that I think of, hey, could they trade for a safety? Could they trade for a safety? I always want to kind of poo-poo it a little bit, because we know how much they want somebody that they know is buttoned up with the communication, that understands the defense. And this is a guy that, of course, would understand that defense. But I think you're right. Like, one, it's in division. And two, I think I've seen the same thing. That just, it's the speed, right? Like, the speed is just not, it wasn't there always in an elite level in the first place, and now it's really downhill.
And I think that's what you're seeing from that's what you're seeing in Miami too, is what they're talking about. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't do it, Joe. I wouldn't give up any asset for him. I wouldn't give up an asset for Tre'Davious White. You know, but if those guys were released, let's say for some reason, and they were out there, I think that you'd have to at least consider practice squad options for them. I don't know if that would even work out. They don't want to get any older necessarily, but it's nice to have insurance for guys who know the system. And, you know, would they want to do that? Would they want to be in a situation where they're on their team that they, you know, made their careers with essentially, and then they're just, you know, practice squad options? I just don't think guys are generally interested in doing something like that, to be quite honest with you. So it's interesting how all this is going to shake out between now and Tuesday. Tuesday is the trade deadline. Real quickly, one other thing on injuries. Sean McDermott was asked about Matt Milano yesterday. Our buddy Josh Reed of Channel 4 asked him for an update. And there was a little bit of confusion, I think, from a lot of people on the response that McDermott gave. But I'll just give it to you this way, because I think what happened was, because the way that Josh asked the question, he said, can you give us an update on Matt Milano if there's still some hope that he can return this season? McDermott said, yes, there is. So like I tweeted out, McDermott said there's some hope for Matt Milano to return. Well, without knowing the context, a lot of fans were like, oh, some hope? Oh, my God. Obviously, that means he's not coming back. That's not what happened. I took his answer, and I wrote the whole thing out on and transcribed it and wrote it. It's at my Twitter, at Sal Sports. I thought McDermott seemed very, very encouraged and optimistic about it. In fact, so much so, guys, that Bove and I, on our podcast last night, said we should play a, you know how like a baby do game? We should have like when Matt Milano's 21-day window opens game. That's how confident we both are that that's going to happen at some point. Like what day that's going to be.
No. All right. How transformative do you think that would be for this defense?
It's a good question. You know, some people still wonder, well, what is he really after not playing since week 5 of last year? I mean, you're talking a year plus of not playing. That's a leg injury, and then there's the bicep injury. Dorian Williams is really starting to play well. That's great. I respect all that. But he's Matt Milano, and I think he's the starting linebacker as soon as he walks back onto your active game day roster. And transformative, Jeremy? I don't know how transformative it would be. I do think it makes the defense better. Like, and that's a good word to use, because maybe they probably can play differently, right? I mean, Dorian Williams is not Matt Milano when it comes to coverage, that's for sure. But I think the question is very fair. Matt just turned 30, I think. I think that's what his age is now. I have to look. 30, 31. He's right in that area. He hasn't played in a while. But look, I mean, it gave him extra time for the leg to heal with the bicep. That's the silver lining here that he's been out. I do think, you know, if you put Matt Milano next to Terrell Bernard, yeah, I think it can change your defense a lot, actually, on the different options that you have and what you can do.
Sal Capaccio. Sal, all right, Halloween tonight, what's the Capaccio household give out? And what are you on the hunt for when you're on Halloween? What candies are you looking for, and what are you getting out of the bag and throwing to somebody else?
So I think we just buy like a lot of the we like a lot of the variety packs, you know what I mean?
Yeah, the mixed bag of fun size.
Yeah, yeah. So we do a lot of that, and we don't get a lot at our house, but it's weird because like literally two streets over, it is totally packed in our neighborhood. So there's an area where like all the kids go and everybody is. There's some great houses. They really do it up. There's people outside. It's awesome. It's one of those things where last year I took a video even. And I'm like, this is my neighborhood. People are like, that is pretty cool, right? And that's in the city, you know. So we're not in the suburbs and like the side streets. I mean, and there's cars everywhere, but it's great and you can see it. The kids everywhere. I'm a chocolate lover. Chocolate candy. I like things with chocolate with almonds. Chocolate almond. I like Kit Kats. I like Twix. Like the traditional chocolate candies. That's what I'm looking for. So that's what I'd be on the hunt for.
The bars. More than the
traditional ones. M&M's are good too. Right? But give me the M&M's with almonds over regular M&M's. Like I don't know. That, I'm a chocolate with almonds guy.
Almond M&M's. Those are out there.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't think I've seen.
M&M's, is it the almonds or the? It's not. Yeah, the
peanut.
Yeah, M&M's
ones.
With almonds, right? Not and there's peanut too, though. There's both. What's the yellow bag? What's the yellow M&M bag?
That's the peanut M&M's. There are so many iterations of M&M's now that I can't even. There's caramel M&M's.
That's what I mean. What's the red
butter.
One?
Then? Peanut butter is the red one, I think.
Oh, okay. That's what I mean. Then give me the peanut one. It's fine. Almonds, peanuts. Yeah, it's all good. I love it all with the chocolate. That's what I meant to say. Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Sal.
All right, guys, you got it.
Sal Capaccio on the Western Hotline on the Bills as they gear up for Miami. Tonight, Texans and Jets. Can I give you a stat on the Texans right now?
Yeah.
What's Nico Collins' status, by the way? He's working his way back.
He's going to play next week. This is his last game off IR, and I saw, having him in fantasy, at warm-ups last week before the game, they were clocking him at 22 miles per hour.
Okay, so he's getting close.
He's going to play next week.
But they're playing it safe. 1 point on the Texans and the Jets. This is from Judah Forking, who's on Twitter, does a bunch of he's at Throw the Damn Ball on Twitter. Great account, like a lot of fun analytics stuff.
Sounds like an account that I would like to throw the damn
ball. It's very, very good.
Yeah.
Betting stuff, like inside of lines and how teams match up. Anyway, he had this about the Texans. Last year, the Texans had a 10.5% explosive pass rate. Mm-hmm. That was good for second in the league last year. So very explosive passing offense, right? Collins breaks out. Tank Dell breaks out. C.J. Stroud breaks out. This year, explosive pass rate, they're 6%, which is near the bottom. Eighth worst. So they went from second best to eighth worst. That could be because, in part, they've missed Collins for a couple of weeks. And two, for this game, no Diggs. Hmm. So it's Tank Dell and
Robert Woods.
Robert Woods and Dalton Schultz and Joe Mixon.
They also, John Mechie, who was a second-round pick of theirs a couple years ago, maybe, but he really hasn't played much. So I don't think you know what you're getting there.
Right.
So it's an old guy, and then it's a guy you have no idea what you're getting. Yeah.
So you get that on the road against the Jets, whose defense is, I mean, whatever, a lot of reputation. They do get.
They did let New England drive 60 yards on them at the buzzer last week.
That's right, they did. But they only gave up 247 yards to New England.
Right before that, they were great.
So just something to keep in mind. I think the Jets are going to win tonight.
They're favored.
They should be.
I think it's probably pretty rare that a two-win team is favored against a six-win team. I wonder how many times that's ever happened.
That's wild.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of get it. The Texans have also only won close games this year, right? Like, they haven't looked spectacular, as just pointed out. And the Jets are losing a lot of close games. So I could get there on the Jets being favored, honestly, even though they have four fewer wins.
803-0550. When we get back, two notes on the Sabres. One, where they are one of the most, blank, and one, where they are the worst, blank.